What is going on, everybody? Welcome to the Fight Network Studios. This is Five Rounds Today. I'm John Ramdean. He is Robin Black, and we're going to start off the top. Some sad news in the world of mixed martial arts. We're hearing reports that UFC fighter Josh Saman has lost his battle. Rest in peace, I guess. Dealing with some issues. I guess a friend of his passed away. We're unsure of the details, but you got to feel for family and friends in a scenario like this.
Yeah, I mean, when you watch sports or entertainment of any kind, you see all these fun things and you learn about greatness and challenge and all those things. But then you also, it's one of the things that comes with following something, is you're reminded about life being short and the world being frightening in many ways. And, it's sad.
And, of course, other news, clearly not as devastating as Saman losing his life, but BJ Penn out of the main event in Manila in the Philippines, so supposed to take on Ricardo Lamas.
Yeah, you know what? Actually, you just made a really great point by putting those two things together. When something feels devastating, oh man, I'm injured, my shoulder, I'm not going to get to fight, you're alive.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You can contextualize. That's one of the things we can do when we see something really sad. Somebody loses a family member or something. Hey, man, it's just my job, or it's just sport, or whatever. You know, and when you – because I bet BJ is devastated.
Yes, he is.
But when
sure.
you think about you have your life, and you have your family, and you have all those things, yeah. all of a sudden it probably makes it a little less – you can put context to it.
Yeah.
You know?
No, I agree 100%. And, you know, it's just one of these things that I'm sure everybody deals with certain things – differently, you know, dealing with tragedy or dealing with disappointment or dealing with what. And, you know, the situation with BJ Penn pales in comparison.
That's right.
But we feel for BJ Penn, clearly.
Course,
you know, this has been a number of times now that he's been trying to get back on the horse. And, you know, there was a whole situation with the website thing, the allegations of this and that. And then the next fight didn't materialize. And now this fight, everybody was sure it was going to happen. He was the main event. And it's an undisclosed injury, so he's out of it. Ricardo Lamas, I think the UFC, trying to find a replacement for him. Who in the world is going to take on Ricardo Lamas in short notice?
You know why I'm picking up my phone? I'm not trying to be rude. I'm picking it up because there was a quote from Winston Churchill. Success consists of going from failure to failure without loss of enthusiasm.
Yeah, right.
You know what I mean? Think of that. Success consists of going from failure to failure without loss of enthusiasm.
Yeah, right.
So if you're BJ Penn or if you're Ricardo Lamas or you're any of us that are facing setbacks, it is a part of being successful. You know, and losing a fight or failing at something you set out to do, if you look at it as not, oh my God, this thing happened, but instead, well, if I imagine myself 5 years from now where something became successful that you were after, this failure or setback is a part of that.
Yeah, and I would imagine that Michael Bisping had that mentality all these years, you know, chasing that dream of facing off against Anderson Silva, one of the greatest fighters to ever step foot inside of the cage, but the title shot just didn't present itself over almost a decade for Michael Bisping. And then
almost more fights than anybody had ever had in the UFC.
Exactly. And then on top of that, a very unlikely scenario where you're partying with your buddy, shooting a movie in a different country, and then you get the call to fight for the UFC championship. It's not an ideal scenario. Michael Bisping goes and makes the best of it, takes out this genetic freak in Luke Rockhold and becomes the middleweight champion of the world. So you just never know how things are going to end up. You just try your best to stay the course, right?
Yeah. I'm feeling an interesting conversation today because maybe it was starting thinking about tragedy, but we're thinking empathetically right now.
Yeah.
You know, we're imagining what it would be like to be a guy setting out to accomplish something and then finally accomplishing it. It's very easy to look and say, oh, my Bisping sucks. Or, you know, there's a million ways you can look at anything. But if you look at it and put yourself in that situation or try to learn from it, imagine what that's like. You set out on a long goal, you never lose enthusiasm no matter how many failures you face. And ultimately, we're sitting here. Michael, check out our new moving stuff in the background.
Yeah.
Michael Bisping is defending his UFC title this weekend. That is fucking cool.
It is cool. Yeah. And what's even cooler is who he's defending it against, a guy that nobody at almost 50 years of age anticipated, especially when, and we've had the conversation before, when you look at the list of contenders, the Jacarés, the Luke Rockholds, the Yoel Romeros, the Gegard Mousasis, that group of fighters, in most people's opinion, they deserve it more than Dan Henderson. When I say they deserve it, it's because of what have you done for me lately? And I think that's what people are looking at. They feel that Michael Bisping should be facing off with one of the top contenders. But this is a goal of Dan Henderson's that has been in his mind since he faced Rampage Jackson or he faced Anderson Silva, something that has eluded him. Now, you would imagine that is such a ridiculous amount of pressure on any individual, especially when you consider the fact that he said, this is going to be my last fight.
Right.
This is the last opportunity for me to realize. Now, again, I don't know if it is a dream of his. He said that. He wants to be a UFC champion. He's already established himself as one of the greatest fighters, certainly one of the greatest American fighters ever, a two-division champion in the Pride organization. He was a UFC tournament champion. So he's cemented his legacy. Everybody, if you follow mixed martial arts, if it's your sport, you know who Dan Henderson is. You know what he's accomplished in the game. This is a guy that stopped Fedor. This is a guy that's been in excellent fights. He knocked out the current middleweight champion. But the idea that this is your last chance, it really is my last chance. How do I make sure I don't fall on my face? How do I, again, you can just look back to the Rio Olympics. An amazing article written by Jordan Burroughs, former, he did win an Olympic gold medal in the past, and everybody believed this guy was a lock to win the gold medal in Rio. He fell short, and then he realized that I have spent so much time chasing this nugget of trying to attain gold. I missed my son walk for the first time. I missed all of these things in pursuit of gaining the gold. And when the time came, I couldn't get the gold.
Wow.
So, you know, you look at all these individuals and their approach to challenging themselves and trying to attain greatness. You have to imagine that there is some ridiculous amount of pressure, internal pressure, in addition to the outside pressure.
Of course. What Jordan Burroughs sacrificed, didn't watch his son walk, didn't all of those things, all that was for was to put himself in a position to win.
Yeah.
And that's all you can do. And then whether you win or not, you can't control that. You can control how well you perform. But think about, I mean, there's a lot of things about this that I find fascinating. And, you know, I fought at the very lowest level. So there's no comparison to what these guys did. But it let me get a little tiny bit of insight into some of the things. And this is a conversation I've had with people before. I'd love to have it with Dan Henderson. Yeah, and I've had it with Joe Dirksen, who had 50, 60.
Our guy.
Yeah, yeah. And so on my second fight, and I think on my fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh, and ninth, in the hours before, I decided without a doubt, this is the last time I'm
going to fight. Why not the eighth?
Because I don't know. It's seven and eight, I was kind of, I had a thyroid disorder, and when I look back, my thinking, I shouldn't have been fighting those fights. And so, I knew I would take a break after that one, but I think I needed to get – I wanted to have to go out on a good one, and I knew that somehow wasn't going to be the one, which sucks. But I was like, this is the last time I'm ever going to fight, so let's just go leave it all out there. I mean the third and the fourth – like And when I talked to Joe about that, he had that thought in the hours before dozens and dozens and dozens of times. So Dan
– what am I doing?
Yeah, that or it's just like, you know what? This is the last one. And other guys phrase it a different way. They're like, this is the last moments of my life. I could die in here, and I'm going out. The people phrase it and shape it in different ways, but it's a very common thought as you're – because people watch fighters fight, And there is no way to imagine what four hours before a fight feels like, going in a vehicle somewhere and all of the, it just, you could
knowing
never
the
be
possibilities
ready.
Yeah. of what, yeah. what could yeah. happen inside of the cage.
Now, all of those feelings, Dan Henderson is so familiar with them. And this is my last fight. He's believed that dozens of times. So that familiarity with that thought process, it's not going to feel weird to him.
I see.
Do you know what I mean? He's been in his last
fight. So if this was
the
first time, that would be a very bad thing.
Yeah. Or it's just a different thing. I mean, because the reason I think people think this is my last fight is because on some level it's like, if it is, I'm going to go out with everything I have. So it becomes kind of a good thing. It's a lie. But it shapes, it allows you to commit. You feel like you need it to give you the full commitment. Since I'm never doing this again, I'm gonna do it with everything I have. And so Dan Henderson has had that experience many, many, many times. He's been walking out. He's been the day of his last fight. He's been waking up in the morning of his last fight. He's walked out to his last fight. You'll see something different from him.
I would imagine Bisping the same thing, though. Bisping's probably had that thought countless times. And what I like is that Bisping says in his training leading up to this fight with Dan Henderson, he goes, I have to think like I'm the hungry challenger. Mm-hmm. That's the only way to think about this fight, is that I'm not the champion. Mm-hmm. So I have to continue to look at things a different way. Why is this different areas of the mental game? Why do you have to insert that into your mind to compete in this endeavor? Does everybody, in order to achieve a certain level of success?
Weirdly, there are some people who, it just all works. And so that's why they're successful. If you take a million people, and let's just say that there are 10 really solid ways to use self-talk and to frame things a certain way and so forth. There's 10 really workable ways to make you successful. Out of a million people, a few of those are just going to meander into that. They're going to develop that process themselves. And so some have it. But for the most part now, Bisping's turnaround before, a couple of fights before Anderson Silva, I think after Rockhold knocked him out the first time, he went to a mental coach. Because what's left for him?
Yeah.
You're going to get better at kicking? You know what I mean? Like, you're still going to improve your skills, but if you really want to improve something that affects all your skills and all your training, and that's being able to perform better. But he has had the experience of, oh my God, it's pressure. It's the Ultimate Fighter. Oh my God, it's pressure. Right. I talked about that one guy and now we're in here. Oh my God, you know, I'm fighting Anderson Silva. I'm fighting for the title. The pressure. He's had lots of that, so he's familiar with that, too.
We're going to take a break. When we come back, we're talking more about UFC 204 that goes down this weekend in Manchester, England, the home of the Dynamite Kid. Welcome back to Five Rounds Today. Ram Dean and Black with you, chatting about UFC 204 that happens this weekend in England, Michael Bisping's backyard, so to speak. I know he lives in California right now to get what he believes to be some of the best training on the planet, and proof is in the pudding. He's currently the UFC middleweight champion. Why?
You mentioned that he was in Toronto at the time.
Yeah.
And it was like a week out when he fought for the title.
Yeah.
And so Jorge Blanco is a sort of a secret weapon.
George,
a lot of these guys.
George, Rashad, and then
And
Bisping.
There's others, too.
There's others,
And I've trained with Jorge, and he is brilliant. He's in Toronto. He does privates as well as teaches stuff. Yeah. If you want to get a hold of him, send us a message, and we'll hook you up with him. But it's not going to be cheap because he's the best.
He's the man.
And when he showed me tape of working with Mike, that exact step out, that exact touch the sternum well, step hard to the outside and throw it. I saw video of him
I'm not surprised.
With Mike.
Everybody raved about him, and he went down to the Black Stallions too, Blanco.
Oh, they love him there too. He's one of these guys. Obviously, he could have fought at a high level, and I think he has competed somewhat, but your role shapes where you end up in life. shapes. And, you know, you end up training, you're a training partner, you're coaching, all of a sudden you're focused on different things. And next thing you know, you're the highest level coach.
Yeah.
Are you going to go now fight in your 30s, or are you going to help make these guys better? So, but yeah, they love him down there. And he's a pretty great coach. He's a very smart guy. You train with these guys and you see these coaches, and it is fascinating because they're all a little different.
They are, yeah.
And just his, he's a very intelligent guy. So his understanding of science combined with art is really good. I trained with Angelo Reyes down in Vegas.
Right. Yeah, Frank Mir's coach.
Yeah, Angelo, a boxing coach. Very interesting again. He was a high-level karate sensei before he started training with Freddie Roach as a boxing coach.
Yeah, right.
And so as he developed his understanding and development and system of boxing, it was informed by his understanding and his love of and his skill in karate. So the stance is bladed slightly different, the way the hips work. You know, he's very focused on that twist. So these guys, you're seeing a lot of changes in, and you're going to see such high-level fighting coming out because the coaches now, if we can sit around in here and analyze stuff, these guys, it's their lives too. But they're now figuring out what's working, throwing out what isn't, optimizing it, building better ways to teach it. Duke will tell you, Duke has really great ways. If I know something works, how do I make you learn it?
Right.
Is it through repetition? Is it through, you know, soft sparring? Is it through drilling? All of those things are different. So they're going to optimize their systems of teaching too. So there's some crazy stuff coming down in the next few years of fighting.
Speaking of which, so you're talking about coaching. Should we be recognizing Jason Perillo, for example? This is a guy that worked with BJ Penn for years. Many people out there believe that BJ has some of the best hands in all of mixed martial arts ever. On top of that, we saw him in the corner of Cyborg, Chris Cyborg. She looked phenomenal in her sophomore effort. In the UFC, and he's the current coach of Michael Bisping, who is the UFC middleweight champion of the world. You know, we often talk about the Duke Rufuses and the Greg Jacksons of the world, but there's so much opportunity for some of these other coaches to make their name. Why isn't Jason Perillo one of these household names?
In some cases, it's just where the conversation started going. A lot of what is discussed in fighting is due to laziness. You know, there's people whose job is to take what was said and then just put it out. I mean, and I know I've often been critical of press, of the journalism or media, whatever you want to call it, around fighting. But if you go to any website, this is a fun game, try it, and just go down it, and there's 15 articles. It's about what they said. It's about what they said. What did he say? Who did he say it about? He said this. I mean, we're just analyzing what they say. So whatever conversations are going is what's being repeated and repeated and repeated. Perillo is brilliant, clearly, you know, like, well, I mean, and to some degree, so some of these coaches now, I think, understand what I'm going to say, and they've already addressed it, and they already think about it in whatever way. But by the time we're talking about Faraz or Greg Jackson or any of these good guys, more people will come there, more eyes will be on them, and they have to build systems to be able to teach 50 people. 50 high-level fighters or 30 high-level fighters. That's different than hungrily teaching, developing just Demetrius Johnson. Mm. So it changes. And you're going to hear about Angelo Reyes. You're going to hear more about Perillo, and there's 6 or 8 or 10 more of them out there. Sometimes we talk about stuff. Who's Ronda's coach?
Yeah, Tavernier.
Yeah. I mean, in the world of boxing or Muay Thai, go look him up. He doesn't exist. He ended up working with a huge name. So he exists. So we talk about him. And I don't know the guy personally. I feel bad when people say nonstop bad stuff about someone. But mostly he gets hate. But on some level, his job now is to go, these idiots don't know anything. Go, you know, how can I get better? And the answer isn't having a meltdown.
But again, a theme we were talking about this is part of the game of martial arts is ego, trying to keep the ego in check. And to something you were saying to me today, and what's very important for growth is to put yourself into a scenario where you're the worst in the room at something.
Yeah. Tim Ferriss, he's one of the guys who's a big champion of that. And so I watched the Blue Jays play with my friends, all of whom knew more about baseball, much more about baseball than me. And it was great. It was really great because I saw how they thought, and I would learn a little bit about baseball, but I learned about their process and I learned about what they liked, and it's relevant to how people watch fighting. But absolutely, you should purposefully find ways to be the worst guy in the room at something all the time. Because if you think, and somebody was asking me the other day, oh, you're doing great breakdowns. I'm a blue belt.
Yeah.
Now, if the level that people are at, we think is black, you should think it's blue. Mm-hmm. You know, that the maximum you can reach is so far.
That's the philosophy of martial arts in general, though. It's not attainable.
Yeah.
You just keep setting the bar higher and higher and higher, and you are going to improve, but you'll never get to perfection.
Yeah, exactly. And we asked Demetrius's coach, Matt Hume, about that. And he's like, we're striving for perfection. And I said, but perfection can't be achieved. And he looked at me like, oh, God, this kid just started watching, like snatched the marbles from my hand. And he's like, no, but you must chase it.
Yeah, of course.
And it's true, but that's got to apply to everything in your life. If you allow your ego to be informed by what somebody says about you on Twitter, or the fact that somebody thumbed up a thing that you posted on Facebook or any of that shit, you are in a lot of trouble. Because and that's why you go in a room where you're terrible at things. That's why you start new things that you don't know anything about, to teach you all you are as somebody who's acquired a little bit of experience in something. If you think you're great, then why would you get better?
You just find yourself a significant other so they can call you on your bullshit.
Yeah.
We're going to take a break. When we come back, we're talking more about UFC 204 in Manchester, England. Welcome back to Five Rounds Today. Ramdeen and Black with you. Before the break, we're talking about the main event between Michael Bisping and Dan Henderson for the middleweight championship of the world going down this Saturday night in Manchester, England. It's an early show for us here in Canada, right?
1 p.m.?
Awesome.
Something like that. So it's 5 a.m. Oh, no, it's not. It's still evening. It might be an hour earlier or something, but it's still evening because it's 5 a.m. in Manchester.
I think you're right.
Yeah, it's right. They're
Philippines. Oh, Philippines, that's what it was. I thought it was this one.
Which is BJ Penn, right?
No, BJ Penn's
right. So, that's sad. But no, it's sad. 5 a.m.
Yeah.
So it's going to be in North America if you're in California or Toronto or
same
wherever.
Time for us?
The same time
same
you're
time.
Used to. But you know what's interesting about that? Which of these guys has prepared to fight at 3 a.m. or 4 a.m. or 5 a.m.? I mean, that's... You're going to act like it's just exactly the same scenario? What are you normally doing at 5 a.m.?
I'm sound asleep.
Yeah. Your body is sound asleep. Your mind is sound asleep. Your physiology is used to sleeping. At 4 a.m., you're going to walk out in front of a whole bunch of really drunk British people who love fighting. And they love. And this guy's going to try to beat you up. And you know what he did? He got himself his new sleep cycle together. So he's optimal at 4 a.m.
Yeah, right.
He's been sleeping until 2:30 in the afternoon, and then having a normal day and getting his meals that way, and his body's now used to fighting at 4 o'clock in the morning. Fucked.
Yeah, we were talking before the break about coaches and specifically Jason Perillo, and I had a chance to talk to Perillo when Michael Bisping was in Montreal. I think CB Dolloway was the fight, and I said, you know, Michael Bisping is, you know, now in his mid thirties. I said, how do you reel things back? Because Michael Bisping has such an intense personality. He said, even though he's in his mid-30s, it feels like he feels like he's in his early 20s. How important is it that you realize your age and you realize the miles to make sure that you're is overtraining a real thing?
Eddie Alvarez says that just means you're a pussy.
Yeah.
But physiologists, exercise physiologists will say it's absolutely a real thing, that part of training is recovery. But everybody's different. I mean, Bisping just goes through the world a little faster and a little more intense than he always has. Do we want to calm that down? He's exhausting guys in fights. He exhausts you when you talk to him. You know what I mean? You can see, like, I do Shooto Brazil, and Jason Chambers, who I do it with, talks about Bisping. It's like, and so is Cruz to a degree. A lot of these guys are that way. And maybe that's one of the things that separates them from the other guys around them. But I'll tell you, Perillo has Mike hitting mitts at 5 a.m. or 6 a.m. or whatever time he's – the exact time he's fighting. And for us, you know, the and the Black Zillions too – actually, no, theirs is Thursday, I think. But for us, when you're sparring your five hard rounds with 1 minute break, it's every Saturday night because that's when you fight. And so your week, your training, your recovery, your thought process, you wake up on Saturday morning with slight butterflies. We're getting you used to it. Like, right. You know what I mean? Imagine waking up every single Saturday knowing that who's the Dominican nightmare?
Yeah, Alex Garcia.
Alex Garcia is going to punch you in the face today. Yeah. Every Saturday morning, you wake up with that awareness. That's going to acclimatize you to that. That's going to have some value, right? So, and people might think, and obviously we're ridiculously obsessed with this stuff. And
but micro is important, right?
Absolutely.
These tiny little things.
Is. If it isn't, and you think it isn't, go ahead and just fight old school. Just skip all the little. And what if it's 0.1% advantage that Bisping gets by training at 5 a.m.? What if it's 0.05 advantage you get by being nervous that Alex Garcia is going to hit you? Mm-hmm. And what if it, because all, if those add up to 3%, I want that.
Yeah.
I can't let you have a 3% advantage if the way you diet properly. Each of those matter. If they didn't matter, we'd just put whoever in cages. All of it matters.
But a guy like Dan Henderson, for example, who's done things the old school way, came from the days of NHB, mm-hmm. before it was MMA, was in these crazy tournaments, 10-minute first mm-hmm. round. He's kind of seen everything. It's like, you know, the landscape changed so much. I couldn't try to do it this way. I couldn't try to do it this way because I'd have three fights here and then I'd sign with Strikeforce.
Yeah.
Or I'd sign with
here. Exactly.
So,
and somebody called me and I got to be in Japan on Friday.
So when things have gone that way for you, do you adhere to the new rules of things? Just like, you know what? I'm just going to do things my way. I've been successful my way. And instead of doing what all these new age coaches, I'm just going to do my road work. I'm going to run 10K a day to get myself in shape and just... I know how to punch. I know how to kick.
Yeah. So there's two geniuses I've been speaking to in the last week, a few short conversations, Brian Stann and Chael Sonnen.
Yeah.
Just this week. And, you know, sometimes you'll overanalyze things. That's very possible in the world. But if you have an analytical approach to things, it can be valuable. When I look at it, Chael's fundamental thing is he's confident. He believes in what he's doing. He's through life, he has seen that his decision-making leads to success.
Right.
So he's going to stick with things. And now, a guy like Chael Sonnen is not fighting some 21-year-old made in a lab anymore.
He's fighting Tito Ortiz in January.
Exactly. And you see that. His belief, his confidence, the lessons he's learned, thrown away things that didn't work. And so he's related to Dan because they've been boys and trained together.
Yeah.
And I think that's some of the mindset there. And short fuse, Ed Herman don't you just feel that he's the same?
Herman
doesn't care about certain things, and these guys have had great success in them.
Before you get to Brian Stann, can we take a break?
Sure.
We're going to take a break. We're going to come back and finish the story, Chael Sonnen and Brian Stann, and what they bring to the table here on Five Rounds. Welcome back to Five Rounds Today. Before the break, we were talking about two geniuses.
Yeah.
Of course, Chael Sonnen and Brian Stann. Yeah. But Chael Sonnen, you said one of the things that he brings to the table is belief and confidence.
Yeah, and you pick that up when you talk to him and you see it in his choices in life. You can't walk out and start a talk on Bellator with, you know, I got all your letters and, you know, and you know what, I don't care what you get. Like, it's so based in his self-confidence. And self-confidence is based in the actions that you've taken for many years of your life have led you to success.
Right.
So they kind of feed each other. It's not like he's just randomly self-confident. They'll turn on the internet and look up anybody doing anything. You'll see morons just, I got self-belief, and they're terrible at whatever it is. So it's success led to confidence, and confidence has led to more success. Brian Stann, I was asking for some perspective and insight from him on something. And now he's super busy. I suspect he's actually going to Manchester, if he wasn't already there when I spoke to him yesterday.
Yeah.
And
Because so you said Joe's hunting.
Yeah, Joe is bow hunting.
Yeah.
Joe is bow. He's hunting elk.
Elk?
Elk. He's going out hunting elk.
You should get him to send you some elk.
Yeah, man, that'd be tasty. And I said something about, you know, he said he may be back earlier if a righteous rutting bull lets him get his organs. And I said, you know, the liver? And he's like, no, you got to go double lungs. You don't want them to suffer. So it's an interesting.
Yeah.
They're not out to hurt. They're out to get food,
yeah,
you know,
right.
and do it that way. But Brian is so concise. Now, obviously, he's incredibly busy. So if he focuses on something, and if that happens to be a conversation with you, it's going to be full immersion, like full presence, and so concise. Like there's no meandering around. If you want to have this glove and it's white, do this, add it this way, apply that, and that'll work. Like it's just he's so concise. Right. You can see the full immersion in the moment of what he's doing.
He's a military man.
Yeah, exactly.
Everything has to be on schedule. You don't want any confusion. Let's get to the point and get out.
Yeah, and we've had him on the show for an hour plus and he's in a military room. It's just cement in the back, and he's fully engaged into what we're doing. Full engagement. Actually, I just got a book called The Power of Full Engagement. I'm just starting to read it. It's not as Anthony Robbins as it sounds. It's just about the idea that, and Leonard, our CEO, has told me, when he's focused on a task, he's doing it.
Yeah.
When he's with his children and his wife, he's with them.
Yep.
You know what I mean? He's not kind of half-assed
or
something. And Brian seems very much like that. And why has this guy become such a great commentator and analyst? Because he's fully in it. He's not showing up, maybe doing it when he's – and you learn stuff from these guys and, you know, all these top fighters, all the new generation of guys are the same. When they're training, that 90 minutes is – it has one purpose, and that is to improve the thing that we specifically plan to improve today. It's called deliberate practice. And you can learn from watching some of these guys. You want to be present in the task. If you're present in the task, you can do it better. And it's something that you want to do in your life. And when you watch the best fighters, there's not a moment where with that underhook and in that position, something sags. That's for us low-level guys that lose and don't get there. These guys, I mean, Brian Stann came out of the Army, trained, you know, and he'd always been a fighter, and he was fighting Vanderlei Silva.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you know what
Marines?
I mean? Yeah,
just
Marines.
So, just
yeah,
so,
yeah, that's true. So. Yeah, you don't mess with that kind of thing. Brian is a very incredible, incredible human being, and when we look at that, you can look at whether you see Mike or you look at Conor McGregor or Ronda. If you choose to hate them for whatever reason, by all means, do it. But you're going to get a lot more value out of studying them.
I understand, but. That's if you – I personally believe that's if you are connected to martial arts, because there's a lot of people that watch this just for pure entertainment. So I'm looking to see somebody get kicked in the face. I really don't care what their personal philosophies are. I want somebody to get me excited, and this Irish dude seems to be making fun of people and doing all this crazy stuff, which – you know, keeps me engaged.
Right.
It forces me to this pay-per-view. Even though the guy with the cowboy hat, what's his name? Cowboy?
Yeah.
He fights crazy.
It's Cowboy.
Oh, it's Cowboy. but he doesn't really say a whole bunch of things. He might give the finger, but when every time I see him perform, it's good. But I need somebody to drive me to the – there's all these fighters and all these shows. I don't know where I should spend my time. So you can understand why some people, the majority of viewers, I think that –
Not our viewers.
You're the best.
Yeah, and you're not watching a 24-hour sports channel or seeking fighting specifically an hour-long show with two dorks.
Yeah.
If you are,
What I'm referring to this weekend, the casual observers, the ones that kind of, you know, drive the financial side of things. They're tuning into Michael Bisping, Dan Henderson. They're tuning into Gegard Mousasi and Vitor Belfort. I don't know how many are tuning into Leo Santos and Adriano Martins.
The jiu-jitsu guys.
The jiu-jitsu guys,
yeah. And there are a lot of them.
But they still – are martial artists. So they're touched by all these things. Yeah, I don't know how many of the casual observers are tuning into Brad Pickett and Yuri Alcantara.
Yeah, it's interesting. So we were talking earlier about I was watching my friends watch the Blue Jays, or I was hanging out with them.
Yeah.
And Evan Boris, who is a kickboxing coach, he works with Henry Hooft, was there. So he and West Coast Dave, who you know I watch almost all fights with. And so they actually – Evan knows more about kickboxing. But when you watched him watch baseball, there was a real strategic approach, a real thought strategic approach to it. It was very interesting. But
are you glued to the screen, or are you having – are you the casual fan that's having conversations with people until something happens?
Yes. Yeah, and then that got – oh, it's a home run.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, that's also a knockout.
Yeah, right.
Well, that's a head kick, right?
Yeah.
So I could relate. Again, it's great to be the dumbest guy in the room or the least talented about something, but also I could – it allowed me to relate to that. And so Edwin was there. He's a singer in
– from Mother Earth. From one of Canada's
Canadian,
best rock bands. Yeah.
And Ed's been there to watch some fights. Ed knows baseball. So he knew what was up. But when he's at West Coast Dave's to watch fights –
he doesn't really say anything.
He doesn't say much. But if somebody gets kicked in the head, he freaks out,
of
right?
Of course.
So it's interesting. But when I watch baseball and I see how much – and these guys are not the average fan, but there's a lot of fanatical baseball viewers, a lot, millions and millions. When a ball comes off the bat and it bounces, they because they know it's a double play. They know right away that's going to go to this guy. That it happens every time. They know a certain hit. They know where the field is. If it's a 2-2 pitch, 2-2, 2 strikes, 2 balls, they know what the next pitch is likely to be. I want people to get to that point as fight fans. I want fight fans to get to that. As the dumb guy, I understood exactly what they were saying because there's such a connection to what is happening. Now, that is hundreds of years or whatever length. It must be hundreds.
No, I mean, I'm sure you played baseball throughout, you know, your school years. So you have an understanding of things. It's kind of ingrained in us that we learn the game of baseball. Again, fighting is very difficult unless you kind of dip your toe into things because, like,
I
understand what you're saying.
I never played football,
right.
But if I'm a football fan, I don't know what it's like to get drilled by that guy in the middle, but I understand.
But
the
even
strategies.
Flag football, you know, you're playing or touch football or playing in the yard. I never played football too, but I played that where you're just throwing the ball around, and I've been winded before.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, geez, could you imagine being hit by one of these professionals running full out, and these guys weigh 200 and some odd pounds? Wow, that's a terrible idea.
For sure. And fighting is the same. And when you pay money to watch something or you subscribe to Fox or you go to a show, you got the right to do whatever you want. I really believe that. If you want to yell nonsensical stuff at them, do it. That you bought that. But it would be really cool if you did that and each time you just saw a little – you're like, oh, that's how – oh, what do they call that? A goma plata? That's cool. How did it work? Next time you see a couple, oh, we went to a triangle. Hey, it was a threat of that. You know, because a fake, pass makes the people run a bit or freezes them and then I hand the ball off. That, there are a lot of that, you know, parallels in fighting and I want people to see it because it's fucking cool.
Yeah.
Like, it's so cool. And it'll happen. It's already happening. But with that comes, it's like, shoot the puck. And it's like, they can't shoot. There's three guys there. Like, if you understand that, but he learned enough to know from the blue line, I want to shoot that puck. Not enough to fully do it. So you see some misinformation, but that's part of the process. People are yelling at the TV now about distance and about timing and about up and down and chaining wrestling together. Off topic, but Cruz did an awesome job commentating.
And Dominic Cruz, the man.
I thought Cormier, the wrestling insight was excellent.
Yeah,
we don't get that often.
Right.
And obviously that's what he is
a
master of. And it's so every single thing that he can offer, the wrestling insight, to the average fan, they've never heard it. So it was very new. I thought that was cool.
We're going to take a break when we come back. I promise we're going to talk about the co-featured bout, Gegard Mousasi, one of my favorites and one of my favorite all-time fighters, Vitor Belfort, a pivotal match at 185 pounds. Welcome back to Five Rounds today. Ramdeen and Black with you, chatting about UFC 204 going down Saturday night in Manchester, England, the middleweight championship of the world. on the line. Michael Bisping looking to make his first successful title defense, his first title defense against the living legend Dan Henderson, the co-featured bout. Vitor Belfort taking on,
oh, you know, I'm just going to go out there and, you know, do my thing and probably get the win, confident.
Gegard Mousasi, yeah. One of my favorite guys because he is so goddamn chill. Mm-hmm. It's ridiculous. Could you imagine you have Vitor Belfort's the guy. He obliterates people. Yeah. When if you are not the best in the friggin' world,
you know,
Vitor takes you out, and that's Mousasi's.
I'm just very confident. I'm going to go out and do my thing, and, you know, get my arm raised, and
just so, so chilled out.
So now, sometimes, rarely, but sometimes you forget about a certain fight. But Mike has never fought Gegard, right?
No.
So we were talking about Bisping, lots of energy, being very wound up. That's him. That's authentically Michael Bisping.
The fucking polar opposite of Mousasi.
Yes. And both work.
Both work.
And why do they work?
And that's what we were talking about before the break. I'm confused. And I think that's what's confusing for some people. Because you could easily see, because we saw it before, Dan Henderson knocking out Michael Bisping. And again, we don't think things are going to go down that way. I actually think Michael Bisping is going to win. But why does that style work? Why does that approach work? Why does that approach work?
So tell me what's different about Michael Bisping and Gegard Mousasi, just on this area.
It just feels like Bisping is more amped up, that his anxiety level is through the roof, and he's using more energy even before he gets into the contest, where Mousasi keeps everything chilled.
So why, so even though what you've just described are polar opposites, there is something that is identical about them. And that is authenticity.
Yeah, right.
This is who the guy is. We're not making him into something else. Bisping, what's one of his weapons? His energy.
Yeah,
how he pushes you. I did a breakdown. You can find it on the UFC YouTube channel. And in it, I looked at the energy systems. There are different energy systems, and the way we express energy, and you get tired when you're running or whatever, the number one job of those energy systems is to keep homeostasis in your body. It's there to keep you healthy and safe. That's why you get tired, because your energy system is there to maintain your body's health and safety. And there are different ones in use. There was one I didn't talk about in this, and it's called the it is the ATP-CP system. ATP, adenosine triphosphate, is the energy that you burn. That's the thing you burn when you do any activity.
Okay.
And ATP-CP is 6 seconds of crazy. Like you just, you know, a shot put. Like the most intense thing. That also burns the most. And then Tyron Woodley.
Burns super hot.
Yeah. Tyron Woodley, we used at the anaerobic thing. That's a little longer. And it requires some recovery, but he can keep doing it because he's a great
Is there a
athlete.
Limit to that?
Yeah. Yeah, if he pushes too far, when McGregor suddenly was done in the first fight with Diaz, he pushed that anaerobic system to the point that it was gone. And now recovery, it was going to dip so low, and you need recovery. You need time to recover. You need space. And Diaz, push. Because Diaz is brilliant, right? He understands this. So when we're talking about cardio in fighting, and
so should we lose that term?
I think we should lose that term. It's so general, and we say, oh, this guy's got great cardio. Under what circumstances? In what conditions? You know, my buddy Joe, who I love, and I talked to him about it on his show.
Because even Cormier called it cardio this past week.
It's the term we use, but it's so general that, you know, I think we could examine it a little differently. And maybe it has to be that way because the audience, this is what they'll want. But Joe, I said on his show, I'm like, Tyron hates it when you say that those muscles take energy and that he burns out. It's like, I don't care. It's my job. And that's cool. That's one of the reasons you respect Joe. But it is a different thing. If we talk about Tyron Woodley the same way as we talk about Nick Diaz, they're not the same.
Right.
Their bodies aren't working the same. The physiology is not the same. And my point was, and I know we're going to run out of time.
Yeah, we got to take a break.
The Bisping is in the middle. He's like a middle distance runner, and his anaerobic threshold is what he has a better anaerobic threshold than you, and he pushes you in and out of both, and he manages.
Because the building blocks are there.
Yeah.
It's been built over years and years and years.
So we built him based on that fact.
Right.
And that's authentic to him. We figured out what he had. It was natural for him to train and push that way, and we made it a feature of how he fights. And Gegard is the opposite.
We're going to take a break. When we come back, we're talking more about the co-feature of UFC 204. Welcome back to Five Rounds. Today, Ramdeen and Black with you, chatting about UFC 204 going down this weekend. We talked about Michael Bisping and Dan Henderson. I think it's safe to say that we both believe that Michael Bisping is the more complete fighter, that he's going to be able to have a system in place that can kind of beat the aged Dan Henderson.
He's never been better, right?
He's never been better,
Dan has been better, but he's never been smarter. And as much of a Dan Henderson fan as I am and always will be, I'm a real fan of Mike.
I love him.
And the way he fights and it, just even him.
He's
a very interesting and cool guy. And so I'm expecting him to be the better fighter.
I want Hendo to win.
But would you be blown away if Dan knocked him out with a right hand? Absolutely.
And not only that, I wouldn't be surprised if Dan Henderson somehow managed to convince some of the judges that he's
won
three of those rounds. I would not be surprised.
I'd be a little more surprised by that.
Really?
Because I think
you mentioned the
Michael Bisping's going to win you for around 4 and 5 in this scenario.
Sure. Then that's Hendo's responsibility to make sure he wins the first three rounds. And he's going to be dangerous in those first. I mean, he's going to be dangerous for five rounds.
But so we know that that's possible, and Bisping knows that all of that is a reality.
Yeah.
And that's an irrelevant reality. He has to just go in and perform at his best. And that's true of Dan Henderson, too, and Dan Henderson always does that. So it's a great fight. It happened because Weidman was injured, and Rockhold just lost the title, and Jacare was coming off a loss, and Romero was suspended. All four of those guys. And people are like, well, he doesn't deserve it. There was no one else.
Yeah.
There was no one else. It was a perfect storm for Dan. And in those perfect storm situations, sometimes it's like, hey, man, you're not even supposed to be here. This is your last
walk.
Free. Yeah, exactly.
And Gegard Mousasi as well. He knows the opportunity in front of him with Vitor Belfort. I like that there's a couple of prospects on the card, too. This Platinum Mike Perry, 8-0. This guy, I believe, is going to be a star.
He's an underdog.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
You see the power that guy generates in those overhands?
Wow.
That was pretty legit, that first fight of his. He looked very good.
Albert Tumanov on the card as well. Leo Santos, his brother Wagney Fabiano, one of the jiu-jitsu coaches, the head instructors at my school, Empire MMA. Got a shout out to Kareem and Achilles. But it's going to be a tremendous night of fights. Gegard Mousasi, Vitor Belfort. Before we get out of here, what do you think?
So we talked about Bisping being,
wound up.
Let's use that. Let's make that a feature. This guy, I can't do the that's yours. But you know, this is his skill. Moving
Vitor's
away,
coming out hard,
being
and
relaxed.
Fast.
Best way to beat hard and fast is manage it and pay real close attention to all your basics and fundamentals, where you are in space, and move your feet and use that crazy jab. He's built for that.
Do you accept the fact that you may lose the first round?
I don't even. Yeah, for sure. Because we're not going after him. But I think that you got a real chance when a guy's coming in that fast, you got a real chance of knocking him out.
Yeah.
And I mean, the simple answer that pops to mind is Stipe and Verdum.
Yeah.
But there's hundreds and hundreds of examples like that. Henderson and Boach, the big one he lands is retreating. A guy is powering forward. His velocity of his chin is added to that punch. But I expect Mousasi to win a decision.
That is it for us. Next week, we're certainly going to be looking ahead to UFC 205, one of the best cards, in my opinion, in UFC history. On behalf of Robin Black, our producer Chase Kaiser, I'm John Ramdeen. Thanks so much for tuning in to Five Rounds today. We'll see you all next week.